Can you say the letter C? CC Hunt Files.
All right. We are back. CC Hunt Files. This is going to be a solo deal. Finishing up the dreaded elk hunt. Let's kick things off the right way. CC Hunt Files, proudly brought to you by Black Ovis. If you guys are not using Black Ovis, you're truly missing out. Now, I'm going to go even one step ahead, and I'm going to say Black Ovis and Camo Fire because I use both of these hand in hand, and you guys should be doing the same thing. If you're looking for the best daily, weekly, or monthly deals on the planet, Camo Fire is the place for you. You're going to find Black Ovis products on Camo Fire and vice versa. Now, if you're looking for specific items, this is where Black Ovis shines. Black Ovis has their own line, which I'm a huge fan of, and you guys will see me in pictures from years past. This year, you're going to see it. A lot of Black Ovis gear. They have really upped their game when it comes to making their own line. Some of their merino gloves, beanies, hoodies. Just some absolutely awesome layering pieces. They've got some rain gear I've tested that's completely badass. On the dreaded elk hunt, I tested a new pair of puffy pants. I also tested a new puffy jacket. I was absolutely blown away by that stuff. Great gear, affordable gear. They've really got a lot of great stuff going. And now, the cool thing about Black Ovis is they have such a wide array. Sitka, Crispy. Word on the street is they're going to have Kafaru packs in there soon. I mean, they've just got so many great items from reputable, outstanding quality manufacturers and businesses. I mean, that's just your go-to. That's your one-stop, all-stop shop for everything you need, bow hunting-related, camping, outdoor living. I mean, trail cameras, tree stands, gear, clothing, broadheads, arrows. The arrow ID has completely changed the game on how a guy can go ahead and get arrows built and done, shipped right to your door. I think it's a 5 to 7 day turnaround on a dozen. I got a chance to tour it when I was there for the elk hunt. And I mean, honestly, it is well worth your time to be a member. You can build points that you can use towards later on. Let's say you've got so many points built up from previous orders and previous orders that you've already placed. You're gaining points. So then what you might do is you might say, okay, I got 58 points built up. I want to get 2 packs of broadheads. You could use those 58 points to go get your 2 packs of broadheads. And maybe now, instead of paying $75 for your 2 packs of broadheads, you're going to pay, 78 minus 58. You're paying $20. See how that quick math? See, I'll tell you what. Shout out to Mr. Marshall, my math teacher. See, that quick math really did come in handy. I used to always tell him he was an idiot and I'd never use it. Well, here I am on a hunting podcast using quick math. Anyways, Black Ovis, check it out. Camo Fire, check it out. Some killer deals going on. They got a bunch of stuff that's going to be happening here in the next month. Killer deals. Give them a shout. Check them out. Another awesome company and a deal you're going to want to touch base with and get a hold of and get signed up for: Hunter's Box Club with my man, my dude. Anybody that follows the WCB podcast, follows all of us. Kurt just got done doing a hunt with him. Our main man, Devin Leonard. We've got a kick-ass deal going on with him through Hunter's Box Club. Get signed up. I think it's $29.99 a month. You get a badass t-shirt and a couple gifts inside the box shipped to your door. I mean, the t-shirt's worth more than the $29.99. First box is free. Get a hold of Devin or Kurt or myself. We'll get you signed up and get you into the Hunter's Box Club. Shout out to them. Okay. Dreaded elk hunt. Well, spoiler alert, for those of you that didn't know, and for those of you that have not watched the video that Martin and I put out, I was not successful. We're going to throw that out there right now. I did not end the dreaded elk hunt the way I was hoping the dreaded elk hunt would end. Unfortunately, did not punch a tag. That last stock, I was not able to make it connect. Total bummer, not going to lie. Tough hunt, but man, let's dive right into it. Let's dive right into it. So right before the hunt, I get the cold and the snow that I need. Frickin' blizzard. Puts like 2 feet down, super cold temps. You know, going into this hunt, I knew realistically this was going to be one of those hunts where the mental aspect was going to be probably more important than the physical because, you know, overall for a hunt like this, you've just got to be prepared. You just got to mentally know it's going to be cold. You're going to be, you know, you're going to be trudging along in deep snow. You're going to be going through and post-hole digging through deep snow. What can I say? I mean, it's a bitch. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. I mean, total bitch. It's just one of those things where, man, you just got to kind of prepare for and you just got to get ready for it. And there's really no other way around it. I mean, there's nothing you can do. I mean, you can try to, I guess, you know, you can try to, I guess, talk yourself into thinking it's not going to be as bad as what it is if you want. But I'm more of a realist. Like, I want to, in my mental state, be like, you know what? There's going to be a lot of this hunt that's going to fucking suck. I know it's coming. So now I need to prepare for it. I need to have a plan in my head of day to day how I'm going to figure this out and how I'm going to make this all go round and how I'm going to divide and conquer. And that's realistically like kind of where my mindset was. I remember being on the plane flying out there. You know, I knew what was ahead of me. I knew what kind of tough hunt this was going to be. I knew how brutal it was going to be. And I think that really helps get your mind right as far as knowing what's coming and knowing what you need to do. And, you know, kind of knowing, I guess, in your own mind, like where things are at and where they need to be and where you need to be mentally and physically. So get to Salt Lake. Buddy Jason picks me up and it's freaking blizzard, man. It's snowing. It's cold. I mean, it's good weather because, like I said, in order for this hunt to work, you need these bulls to get pushed down the mountain into spots that you can go chase them in. And there's a lot of public that's close to some private in different spots and a lot of privates up high. And you want these bulls to get pushed off that private and get them down onto the public where a guy like me can go make a play and actually go, you know, try to make plays. So that was good. The cold and snow was good. That's what we wanted. By no means was I bitching about that. I wish it would have happened maybe a day or two prior to whenever I got there, because the one main problem that I ran into right off the rip was another storm was coming in right after this. So I was really worried about getting basically caked in, whited out, whatever you want to call it. But basically when the clouds and the snow are coming in and rolling into the mountains, they will sit there until the storm passes. Well, that takes away your number one line of defense. So that takes away basically your number one method for finding and getting on elk, and that's running your glass. When you can't see 50 feet in front of you, it's pretty hard to try to figure out what these bulls are going to do or even just find bulls in general. I mean, it's you're pretty much a dead duck in the water at that point. Well, lo and behold, on day one, Martin and I get up, complete whiteout snowstorm. We hike up in, we get into this killer spot, and I mean, I posted some pictures and video and different thing. I mean, it's just an absolute whiteout. I mean, it's just, there were times where I don't know if we could see 20 feet in front of our face. You know, I mean, it was a brutal whiteout. And it was one of those moments where I had a really bad feeling that the entire day might honestly be right like that. You're caked in, you're pretty much forced. You know, you got two options. You can ride it out and stay in there and hope that the storm lifts. But the problem was this storm was like an all-day event. You were getting a few inches per hour. The clouds and everything had just caked into the mountains and just stuck. They were just going to stay put until the storm lifted, and then they would clear out. Well, the storm was supposed to last pretty much all day. So Martin and I stayed up there for about half the day, and it got to the point where we honestly felt like we were burning calories, burning time, and burning energy for nothing. The storm wasn't going to lift. It was going to stay caked in. Unless an elk decided to get up and literally walk within 30 yards of us, that's about all the visibility we had. There was absolutely no way we were going to get on bulls. So With 5 hard days left ahead, we decided, okay, let's hike out. Let's try to glass lower, see if any elk had pushed low, potentially like down into what would be some of the lower land stuff. We thought maybe we could get lucky. Maybe we could figure something out down there. But basically, let's conserve energy. Let's not just stay up here all day for shits and giggles. Let's try to be smarter and hunt smarter, not, you know, hunt smarter, not harder, per se, in this moment in time. So that's what we did. Hiked down, spent the rest of the evening glassing from the truck, did find some elk, no bulls, but did find some groups of cows that had already started to move down out of the high country. So we thought, all right, well, this is good. What we can do now at this point is we can make a good game plan for tomorrow. The storm should clear. We knew day 2 was going to bring a ton of heavy snow to hike in, and it was going to be ultra cold. It was supposed to be like in single digits, 2 feet of snow at some spots, probably easily a foot to 15, 16 inches pretty much everywhere. So it was definitely going to be a long day. We had a really good game plan. We wanted to get on this little secondary ridge that overlooked a couple big basins, both sides of the highway. And we really thought, you know, we would pretty much try to get a good night's sleep, rest, some of that energy that we conserved for half the day. The first day, we were going to need it because it was going to be a long, brutal day on the second day. Well, little did I know just how long and how brutal that was actually going to be. So, get a good night's rest. Between traveling and getting there and the first day and everything, you know, I mean, I slept pretty good that night. I felt pretty good. Ate a really good meal. Get up on day 2 and we get going about 4:30. So we gave ourselves about an hour and a half, before daylight to hike up in there. And it's really important to get on your vantage points, you know, at daylight or be there real close to when it's cracking daylight. So that way you're already up there and you can start glassing. And right away we found elk right away, right off the rip, pretty far off, big group of bulls. Some really, 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 really good bulls were in this group. We were really, really stoked to get in there and figure out basically kind of where the elk were, where they had been pushed from between pressure and the cold and the snow from the day before. Because you got to remember, this is all public land. So you're dealing with pressure. You're dealing with a ton of people. Everybody's out trying to do the same thing you're trying to do. And that's very important to keep in mind. You know, I think a lot of people, they look at, the cold and the snow. Yeah, it's an elk. They're hard to kill. But they almost, at times, I feel like they forget the people factor. And by people factor, I mean, this is public. So anybody that has an elk tag can be hunting this extended late season archery hunt. Anybody. And there's a lot of people that really, really want to kill an elk. So therefore, they're on this unit. They're looking for elk too. Now, did I see as many people on this hunt as I did, you know, in the rut? No, absolutely not. You know, there's less people that want to do a hunt like this because of the cold and the snow and the elements and the conditions and whatever, but there's still a fair amount. And you got guys snowboarding, skiing, you got guys out walking dogs, you got guys out hiking. I mean, you know, you're still dealing with the human people pressure factor. Well, that ended up killing us on the first group of bulls. So we find this big group of bulls, a bunch of really good bulls in it. We decided we're going to bail off, get to the truck, drive out around the mountain, get a better vantage point on these bulls, and try to maybe make a play. That was part one. Part two was we wanted to drive by the two trailheads that were closer to these bulls and see how many cars and trucks were there, because we really didn't want to waste our time going after a bunch of bulls that already had 20-some guys on it. Well, unfortunately, there were 13 vehicles between the two trailheads, all of which I would say, besides maybe one car, definitely were hunting rigs, definitely were hunters. So Martin and I decided, well, it's still early. Let's go try to find some other bulls somewhere, and let's see if we can find maybe a bull or a group of bulls that's not being pressured and that's not got a ton of people on it. So back to the truck we go. We haul ass, get over to the other side of a mountain, hike up in to get a vantage, and we start glassing. Now, from this vantage, there's not, this spot's a spot that Martin likes to go to late every year. It's one of Martin's spots. I've never been there. Not your traditional, I would say, elk spot. Really cliffy, a lot of rocks. You're not going to see a ton of elk there. But what we were looking for was maybe a pressured bull on his way down, or a small group on their way down that wanted to get in those rock bands and potentially wanted to get away from people, get away from pressure, and tuck themselves in for the day. Well, lo and behold, around noon, that's exactly what we find. So we find this great bull, 6-point, finding tucked up in the cliffs all by himself. And I'm like, fucking bingo. Like, here we go. Like, this is what I'm looking for. So he's up there, bedded down, just chewing his cud. I mean, he's sunbathing. I mean, he's honestly, like, basically, this bull's doing his own thing. He's hanging out. I mean, it's one of those deals where he knows he's in a good spot, and I feel like he's very relaxed. You know, at times he's laying on his side. He's got his head down. He's chewing his cud. He's just laying in the sun up in the cliffs. So immediately Martin and I are trying to figure out, like, okay, where do we put a stock on? You know, how do we get to this bull? Where can Martin go with the spotter to watch the bull? And then how am I going to make a stock and make a play and get up to the bull while Martin watches the bull? So we're trying to figure out how we're going to tag team this bull. What we end up deciding is that we're going to get on the same face as the bull. Martin can go partway up the mountain. He's going to be able to glass the bull. I'm going to have to swing down around from below the bull, get in the drainage that would have been to hit the east of the bull, go up the drainage, which we'll get to this in a minute, but the absolute most brutal physical fucking hike slash climb that I've ever made. Through the nastiest, thickest scrub oak. Everything's covered in snow. Anyone that hunts Utah should have to go up through this at least one time just to feel what it's like to completely get your ass kicked by Mother Nature in every aspect. Just so that way you can kind of pat yourself on the back and be like, yeah, I've went up one of the nastiest, steepest draws on the Wasatch Front. I just feel like everyone should do it once just for fun. But I was going to go up there, get up there, get on the same level as the bull, slide across the rock face to where the bull would be below me, and hopefully can see the bull to be able to kill the bull, or see the bull to where I can make a play. Well, we get into position. We get to Martin's spot. We hike into there. We're both there. Can't see the bull. The bull has gotten up. So what we're figuring is the bull has moved back tighter towards the cliffs, probably to gain more sun, and bedded down again. We don't know this for sure, but we have to go with it. It's the only lead we got. It's the only play we got. So basically what we're going to do is we're going to stick with our game plan. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to take off. I'm going to head up the draw, go across the rock band, and try to drop in on this bull. Problem is, Martin cannot relay any messages to me as far as where the bull is, because Martin can't actually see the bull at this point in time. It's about 1 o'clock. My plan is to be up there by 4. It gives me 3 hours to go about 1,700 yards from the bottom to the top. And so it begins. Now, it had snowed the day before, or should say the night before, and snowed all day 2 days prior to that. So going up through this draw, right off the rip, I mean, I realized real quick how absolutely insanely steep this draw was and how thick it was. And Martin told me, he's like, dude, he's like, you know, I go up and down this draw a lot during shed season and late season. He's like, I'm just telling you, it's fucking, it's some of the thickest, nastiest oak brush on the whole unit. And he wasn't exaggerating. He wasn't lying. Just to give you a rundown of what it was like, I ripped a couple holes inside my black Ovis Merino 3/4 zip hoodie. I lost 2 arrows that I never did find. I busted the back 10-inch bar on my bow twice and had to get my wrenches out. I'm smacking it on trees and stuff, and tighten it. Mind you, I mean, I've got an Allen key set. Like, I'm tightening this fucking thing down as absolutely tight as I can. You're on your hands and knees. You're covered in snow. You're wet. I mean, it was awful. I mean, at times it was honestly almost impassable in certain spots. 3:45 rolls around, and I've still got about 500 yards to go. And I'm like, holy shit, like, I'm going as fast as I can. It's just taken me forever to navigate through this. So at this point, I'm really kind of getting nervous because I'm like, man, I need to get up there. So now instead of being up there at 4, my goal is to be up there at 4:30, 4:45. That's only leaving me with 45 minutes, 50 minutes of daylight to then find the bull and figure this all out. So I'm really honestly kind of, at this point, I'm scratching for time. Now, my plan is to get up there, obviously find the bull and get a play. But, you know, this would be a lot easier if Martin could see the bull. So he still is not able to locate the bull. He's on the spotter, frantically trying to find an antler, an ear, something, just anything that gives him a tip off of where this bull is. He cannot find the bull. I cannot see the bull because I'm obviously one whole drainage over to the east. So I'm still on the struggle bus, heading my way up, finally get up there. And I start working my way over into the cliffs. Well, then my next problem arises. The cliffs have a ton of water runoff that had frozen. Half of them are a sheet of ice. Absolutely too dangerous. I've learned my lesson in cliffs. There's just certain things I'll do and there's certain things I won't. And these cliffs were already steep as shit. Throw the ice on them and dip in the snow. And it just made it to where I was going to have to there's just no way around it. I was going to have to come up with a different plan. So my plan was to stay. You know, oh, I forgot to tell you, at this point, we're at like 4:45, 4:50. So, I mean, I'm pushing for time. I wanted to be up there at 4, then I pushed it back to 4:30, 4:45. Like, I mean, I'm cutting it close here on time. So my plan now is what I'm going to do is I'm going to hit the rock band from the bottom. Instead of going up in the cliffs, I'm going to run the cliffs out. So they're running from like right to left or like east to west. I'm going to run them from the east side or the right side to the west, to the left side. And as I'm doing that, I'm frantically searching with my 12x50 loopholes, trying to pick up this bull. Now, this would be a lot easier if I knew right where the bull was and I could have Martin being like, hey, go another 100 yards. The bull's going to be to your right. He's going to be to your left, you know, whatever. But neither one of us at this point know where the bull is. So about 5 o'clock rolls around. I get clear up on the very top where now the rock band starts to dip over the other side. I know this bull's over here somewhere. I have no choice but to peek up and over the ridgeline. Not a huge fan of this because you're skylighting yourself, but like I said, I have no choice. So I hug as tight as I can to the rocks, try to keep myself from being skyline, pop over, there's the elk bed. No elk in it. I'm like, okay, well, the bull was right here. Tracks are leading west, so he's wrapping around the rocks. I'm like, all right. I shoot Martin a text. I'm like, hey, I got tracks. Here's what he's doing. I'm going to keep sneaking. I keep sneaking. No bull. I'm like, shit. So across the canyon from me, I pick up tracks. Right as I pick up the tracks, immediately in my head, I'm like, shit, was this bull heading west, or did he possibly bust me and is taken off, or what's going on? I catch a glimpse of him. I catch a glimpse of antler. He's about 110 yards away from me, tucked up in some oak brush. He's already spotted me. I don't think those tracks, I think that was just him moving. I think that's the way he was naturally just going. At this point, Martin still can't see him. I've got the bull pegged. The bull's got me pegged. 150 yards. We're at a standstill. I'm like, well, shit. So now at this point, I pull my phone out because I'm like, well, there is no shot opportunity. He's too far. He's not going to come my way. I'm not going to continue to make this stalk. At this point, I'm pretty much fucked. But cool thing is, found the bull. I'm going to get to watch what this bull does. And about a minute later, the bull gets nervous and decides, you know what, I'm going to get out of here. So he crosses the drainage and goes up and over right in the skyline. Beautiful. Martin gets some beautiful footage. I get some really good footage. Goes up and over the next ridge, heading west, right as the sun's dipping down. Here goes the bull. There goes my hopes and dreams. So now it's about 5:20, and I got to literally, feels like I just got up there. I got to hike my happy ass clear back down. Drop a couple thousand feet of elevation to get back to the truck. Navigate in the dark, get back out. So needless to say, it was a super long hike in, super long hike out. Man, it's one of those deals where I really wish we could have kept eyes on him. I wish I could have got up in the cliffs. That might have been a difference maker, but with the ice and the snow, it just wasn't safe. It's just not a play I was comfortable with doing. It's just not something that I really wanted to do and take a risk on. So, going to live to fight another day. The next day is going to be day three. So, you know, man, I mean, close call. Single bull by himself in a pretty killable spot, just tough to get to, man, just took a lot of energy out of me. I'm not going to lie. I was really dead. That was a long one, long day. But like I said, though, this was all part of it. I mean, this is good. Well, you know, we're going back to that mental aspect of this. I had it in my head and I knew realistically, you know, I knew going into this, there were going to be long, long days and very, very strenuous, tough days. And I mean, I had that in my mind. I had that in my head. Like that was just going to be part of it. There was nothing I was going to be able to do. I was going to have to just deal with it. And so I really think by me mentally preparing for that, that gave me an edge because I already knew what was at stake and what was ahead. And I was able to prepare for that. Like I was okay with getting my ass kicked day in and day out. I knew that's how it was going to be. I was ready for it. I was prepared for it. And I think guys need to be realistic on these types of hunts. I think you need to look in the mirror and be like, okay, this is going to be tough as hell. This is about a 3% success rate hunt at best. I'm going to get my ass kicked day in and day out. This is going to be the toughest hunt of the year. It's going to be the coldest hunt of the year. It's going to be the most snow, like, et cetera, et cetera. I'm just going to have to hit the freaking badass button every day and give it my all and let the cards fall where they may. And that was my philosophy. That's what I did. Day two proved to be exactly that. Going into day three, Jason was off work. It was a Sunday. Him and I were going to be able to hook up, and our plan was to do some driving right off the rip in the morning, try to find some bulls and see what was going to happen, try to do some glassing from the road, try to basically cover a bunch of country and try to figure out kind of where some of these bulls had gotten pushed around. With all the pressure Saturday plus all the snow, these bulls were moving around a lot. They were pushing down. So that was kind of the game plan. Good buddy of mine, Jared Knighton, he was off from work on Sunday too and said, hey man, let's hook up. Let's go to one place in glass. Let's hike in the morning. Jason was going to do some driving around for us and see if he could spot some bulls from the road with a spotter. Let's just try to get some bulls turned up and then let's see what happens. So that was our plan. So Jared and I went to one spot, hiked up in, got onto a really good vantage. We were both pretty pumped about the spot. Right at first light, lo and behold, here comes a couple guys blowing right through where we were anticipating elk to come out of. Pretty disappointing, but once again, this is public land. It's the last weekend of the hunt. The hunt ends on Wednesday. This is the last Sunday of the hunt. I mean, there again, you know, going back to the mental thing, like you got to be prepared for this. You got to be prepared for disappointment from other people, quote unquote, blowing your spot up or thinking the same as you and beating you to a spot, or in this case, for whatever reason, they just decided to come in a different way and they thought that, you know, they needed to be where they needed to be. And that ended up being right where elk were the day before. Jared had spotted them in there. So pretty discouraging, pretty disappointing. But one good thing was Jason found some bulls from the truck in a pretty killable spot. And he gave us a ring and said, hey, guys, I got some elk over here, found some bulls. So here's the deal. You know, maybe you guys ought to get in the truck and come over here and we'll put a plan together. We can all glass them up. So that's what we did. We hook up with my buddy Jason and we get over there. We find this group of bulls. There's five bulls. They're way up there. A killable spot, yes, but super high. So pretty much kind of what we were thinking is we thought, well, our best bet or our best play is probably going to be to wait these bulls out and see where they go. Right at this point, it's about mid-morning. We thought they would move again, and then from there, they would bed for the rest of the day. Well, that's exactly what happened. We watched them go from this little bowl way up high where they were at in this little basin. They busted up and over. Not really quite sure if a hunter spooked him or they just wanted to get out of there and get into a better position for the rest of the day. But they bust up and over a ridgeline, drop down over the backside. So we jump in the truck and get to a vantage point to where we can use the spotters and we can glass this other side of the mountain up on the backside and see where they're at. Now, there's already a couple guys in trucks over there, and they're glassing these bulls. I'm assuming the same group. But no one's making a play. No one's getting out of the truck. So what we did was we glassed them up, saw where they were heading, and we said, okay, Jason's going to stay here. He's going to keep an eye on the bulls. Jared and I is going to park, and we're going to go hike up in. Not a super long hike, but super steep. And what our plan was for Jared and I was to get up in there, and we were going to basically just stay up in there the whole day. We were going to pretty much, we were going to try to wait the bulls out, relocate them up there, get in position, and try to see what they were going to do. There was a couple different saddles up there that they could go through. If they got up to feed, we thought they would work towards one of these saddles. So our plan was to try to make an educated guess on which one and get in position and try to set ourselves up for success that way. But like I said, once again, you know, this is all a guessing game. Well, long story short, here's how day three went. We got up there on those bulls, Jared and I, about 11:30. And the bulls didn't do a fucking thing all day. They literally got up right before dark and they fed right in their beds. They were chewing their cuds like old beef cows all day long, never moved. We couldn't get any closer to them because they were in such thick stuff. There was no way to get to them. So they had to make a move for us to make a move. We thought about playing the bump game where one of us would kind of work our way towards them and purposely push them and then play the escape route. But the problem was they were going to wind that guy long before they were going to wind the pusher so early. We felt like we had really no clue what they would do, where they would escape to, because there were so many different points of interest to where they could escape to. There's a couple different ridge lines they could go over. There's a couple different saddles they could have used. So we almost felt like we were better off to roll the dice, wait the bulls out, and hope around 3:30, 4 o'clock they'd get up and make a play. Well, joke was on us. They honestly didn't get up, and they didn't make a move or do anything, literally, until about 5:15. With about 15, 20 minutes of light left. So you know how that story ends. We watched the bulls. We ended up seeing a really, really good mule deer buck up there that day. Extremely cold. We both froze our asses off pretty much all day because you're just sitting. Started a little fire to keep warm. But very long day. I mean, but that's one of those deals where there again, you know, you got elk. You don't leave elk to find other elk. You got elk bedded. Five really good bulls. You just need them to get up and make up. You need them to make a play for us to make a play. And unfortunately, they just never got up in time for us to actually have time to go make a play. And they never really showed us what they were going to do. When we left that night at dark, those bulls still weren't heading in any direction. They were just basically up from their beds feeding. So, I mean, who knows how long they fed there, how long they stayed there. It's hard to tell, really. So going into day four, my hunt's halfway over. At this point, I feel pretty decent body-wise, mentally feeling pretty good. But it's just, you know, the days are getting longer. I felt like at night I wasn't sleeping as good. I was kind of fighting the anxiety of knowing the next day. Okay, here's one more day clicking off. You know, you're excited, but yet, you know, you kind of know your hunt's halfway over already. I mean, here we are, the hunt's halfway over. So it's kind of one of those deals where I felt like sleep started to play a factor in this because I was worrying so much about stuff I couldn't control. I couldn't keep my mind from racing. I felt like every night that went by, I slept less and less. I'm getting more anxious and more worried. You know, on top of the physical and mental side of all the toughness of this hunt, you know, there's the factor of you got to make sure you're sleeping good. You got to make sure you're eating right. I mean, these are very important things that on a hunt like this, if they're overlooked, you can really fuck yourself, for lack of a better term. You've got to get rest at night. You've got to give your body time to rest. You need to be carb loading. You need to have food throughout the day to keep sugars up, to keep, you know, calories burning, to keep metabolism going. I mean, these are all things that are absolute musts during a hunt like this. So I'm trying to control as much as I can, but I'm also catching myself, my mind wandering a lot as far as just, man, here goes another day. You know, I know how hard of a hunt this is. I know what's at stake. I mean, it's, I just want it so bad to happen, and I'm trying to do everything in my power to put myself in the best, you know, the best percentage play or chance or stock I can to have a good solid opportunity. Well, lo and behold, to make things worse, not only is the hunt halfway over, but giant snowstorm blows in Sunday night. I wake up about 4 o'clock on Monday. Jason's going to drop me off before work. I'm going to hunt for most of the day by myself and then maybe meet up with Martin that day. He was back to work. And it's freaking putting it down. I think it was 3 to 4 inches an hour. Everything's caked in. Pretty much at this point, once again, almost like the first day, gonna have to wait it out. Decided to go ahead and go for it, but I mean, half my morning I'm caked in. Can't really see much. It's just kind of one of those deals where that's just kind of how the cards fell, just kind of how the pieces fell. You know, weather is one of those deals where you just can't always. Hold on 1 second here, guys. I've got a little bit of static going on here. Yeah, you just can't always really, you can't always plan for it. You can't always, it's not always going to go inside your favor. It's not always going to be, you know, it's not always going to be in your best interest. I mean, that's just kind of how it is. I mean, sometimes the weather really plays a terrible card for you, and there's nothing you can really do about it. Unfortunately, out of these 6 days, I had a couple days that just really, really, really sucked weather-wise. And day four was one of those. Got on some elk. Never got on anything that was big. Never got on anything that was a bull. By big, I should say, never got on any big groups of elk. Got on some small groups. Cows and calves, no big groups, no bulls. So going into day five, our plan was to totally change areas. We're hoping that now we've kind of canceled some areas off on days four and three. We've seen some elk move out of areas, move into new areas. So now we're really trying to pinpoint, okay, where are we going to spend the last 2 days? Our philosophy was I'm going to spend day five and last day of the season, day six, we're going to try to find an area and spend 2 days and just go all in and hope that this area produces in one of the 2 days. You know, so you're talking, you got 24 hours in one spot, basically a daylight to go in and hopefully get it done. Well, on day five, hiked up in super early, couple mile up in, got up into around 9,000 feet, which was way high, but it gave me a great vantage. Got up in there, super, super windy that morning. At times, it was gust up to 70 and 80 miles an hour. Just made it super, super hard to glass, super hard to find elk. Martin was going to get off that day at 11. I did not find any elk that morning. Super disappointing. Ton of sign, ton of tracks. New elk were in the area. So we said, okay, let's get somewhere for the evening hunt where this wind isn't going to play so much of a factor. And let's just see what happens. Let's just see what we can do. That evening, got into a bunch of elk, no good bulls, but promising sign, did see a bunch of elk heading down, coming out of the high country, heading further down on public, off of private. So that was a great sign. So day six, I feel like the game plan was going to be to hunt in some of that lower public, catch these bulls getting pushed down between the weather and just the pressure. That's day six, last day. That's kind of where we were going to roll the dice. A lot of miles on day five, super long day. On day five is when I really started to feel it. It's been a long time since I've been on a hunt where my body really started to feel like it was redlining. I think post-holing through the deep snow, just burning the calories, probably not getting as good a rest as I should because I was just really struggling with turning my mind off at night and letting myself sleep. I was really feeling it. I'm not gonna sit here and bullshit any of you. This is real shit. This is what goes on hunts like this. I mean, I was feeling it. I could tell my legs, you know, my back, just my body. I was feeling it. I knew day six. I try to give it 120 no matter what I'm doing every day, but I knew I had to absolutely dig deep and really, really mentally and physically push through day six. I knew it was going to be tough. I knew it was going to be a struggle. Mentally, I knew what lied ahead. Physically, I knew it was going to be a grind, and I was just going to have to push through it. And I mean, this is life. This is bow hunting. This is being a husband, a dad, a father, you know, just a friend, anything. I mean, you're going to have obstacles in life where you just know shit's going to suck and your body's not feeling it. You're not feeling it, but it's just got to be done. And that's kind of where I was at. Plan for day six was to get up super early. Unfortunately, another storm was rolling in that night. We were hoping it wasn't going to cake in the mountains all morning. We knew at night it was going to cake in. So we were hoping these animals would really be on their feet in the morning, trying to make their moves, get in and get out of places, go feed, go back to bed, etc. So that's what happened. Jason dropped me off. Martin was going to be able to meet up with me after work around 11 in the morning. Super shitty weather. Snowing, caked in, but it's the last day. We got to go for it. Jason drops me off. Right away, I find a bull. Lo and behold, down low, he's on a side hill that is north facing, tucked in a bunch of oak brush, and it is fucking cold. I think I started a fire at 9 o'clock in the morning, if that tells you anything. I'd only been out there a few hours and already needed a fire. So the plan was I was going to babysit this bull, keep the glass on him till Martin got there, and then we were going to trade spots. Martin was going to stay there with the fire. I was going to loop all the way out around the mountain, get on the opposing ridge, and drop down in on this sucker. So about 11, it was about, let's see. Martin got there about, 11:30, 12 o'clock. I'd been watching the bull all morning. He, at times, would get up, stand, stretch, look around, bed back down. A couple times, he was laying on his side, all stretched out. I think he knew he was in a great spot. He was tucked in. The whole time, I was scanning, looking for other deer, looking for elk. I was trying to, you know, in my mind, have a line of travel for this stock and trying to see, you know, kind of like what lied ahead. Once again, I knew it was going to be a brutal stock. It was going to be an all-day stock. It ended up being 5 hours. We'll get to that in a second. But the whole morning, I'm just kind of trying to get in my mind, scan the area, and just kind of get prepared for Martin to get there, take over the glass, and then me to go drop down in on this buck. bull. So the good thing about this bull, the spot he was in, was Martin was going to be able to watch me make the entire stock and be able to help me. There were a few mule deer bedded to the east of this bull, but I really didn't think they were going to bother anything. I was going to slip in between him and them. I didn't think they'd be able to see me, which they didn't. So that was cool. I kind of was able to totally avoid them. That's something you really got to think about when you're on these stocks, is it's not only just the animal you're trying to kill, but you also don't want to bump any animals in between you and him. So you don't want to blow any elk out. You don't want to blow any mule deer out, because that's all going to tip that bull off. Oh shit, something's wrong. You know, mule deer goes screaming out of there. He knows something's up. So Martin gets there, and the play is I'm going to drop back down into the bottom of this basin. I'm going to take this ridge line, walk it clear to the top, get clear above this bull. I'm going to drop down in on him from an angle. I'm going to start on the ridge to his east and angle into the drainage that he's in. Hopefully, from the looks of it, get within 60, 70 yards of this bull and then make a play from there. Either try to stalk in or possibly wait for the bull to get up. So that's exactly what I did. I start this stalk around 12:30, start making my way. Super cold out. I think it was, I want to say it was 12 that day, maybe 13. A lot of snow, fresh snow. So that's one good thing, was throughout this trip, I had a lot of fresh snow. It was never iced over. and really crunchy. So it was nice to stock in and make moves in because it wasn't loud. That's a huge key factor to what I was doing, because snow that's super loud, it's almost impossible, realistically, it's almost impossible to stock in. When you're crunching through snow and you're trying to get in within a few hundred yards, or let's say you even get to 100, it's almost a miracle because these animals can hear that. I mean, you know, they're using their eyes, their nose, and their ears to every advantage. So one good thing was the snow was powder. I was able to stalk quietly. I get up above this bull and okay, now it's go time. I'm talking to Martin. We're making a plan. I'm going to drop in on this angle. I'm finding my points of interest. So my points of interest, when I'm on this stock, okay, I know where the bull is. Now I'm kind of drawing lines. So I've got like seven key features, you know, and I'm going to break them into parts. So plan A on the stock, I want to get to this big rock. When I get to the big rock, then I'm going to execute plan B. Plan B is to go from the rock to a clump of trees. When I get to the clump of trees, plan B is over. Now I'm going to, you know, or sorry, not plan, but part. Part A, part B, part C, part D. What this does is it makes me hyper-focus on the task at hand. You want to slow stocks down. Even when you think you're going slow, you want to go even slower. A lot of stocks are won and lost on patience and being slow and methodical. So if I've got an hour-long stock, it's going to be 300 yards, okay? If I break that in to points of interest, it makes me hyper-focus. Okay, I got to go 85 yards to get to there. Once I get to there, I'm going to regroup, and then I'm going to go from there to this point. And what this does is this makes me slow the process down. I'm not just going to go, okay, I'm here, now I need to hurry up and get to the elk. If you do that, I feel like you rush and you try to get there too fast. So if you break it into little rewards, like, okay, the first thing I got to do, you know, part A, get to that rock. Part B of the stock, I got to get to this clump. Part C, I'm going to move 100 yards to my right to get to this open patch. Part D, I'm going to start angling towards the bull, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I have found that by breaking a stock into parts and pieces, it makes me more methodical, makes me more patient. And honestly, my success rate on stocks and on filling tags has went up by me using this. I feel like it's really something that if you adopt this into your stock regimen and you break them down into pieces, it slows you down, it makes you more methodical, and it keeps you hyper-focused on the task at hand. Like, yes, the goal is get in there and get an arrow in this bull. Yes. But to get to that point, I've got to win a bunch of little battles to then win the war. And I feel like if you're focused on a little battle and then another little battle and then another little battle, your hyper-focus is better, you're slower, you're more patient, etc. You got a better chance of actually winning the war. So that's what I did. So all's going well. It's about 3 o'clock. I'm partway through this stock. Things are going great. I'm already past the deer. They now can no longer see me. There's no chance of that. The elk cannot see me at this point. He's honestly at dead asleep. Martin said at one point in time, he had his head rolled back, his eyes shut. I mean, he's down there pretty much just freaking hanging out. So that's good. He's not on alert at all. The problem I'm starting to have is I know the way the thermals work out there. As your sun starts to go down and things start to cool off, your thermals are now going to suck down. Problem with that is I felt like my thermals and my directionals were going to suck down and pull towards the head of the ravine, which is in the direction of the bull. So basically what that means is the longer it takes for me to get down there, the more of a chance that I've got of this bull winding me. That was my biggest, I guess you could say, fear. And in the video, you can see me making my way down this stock, and it'll make a lot of sense. As I'm making this stock, the wind is blowing from right to left, but it's continuing to angle closer to where the bull's bedded, and that's because the thermals are starting to shift because the cold is setting in. So instead of the thermals rising due to the sun, now if the sun is setting, it's getting colder, the thermals are starting to push down. That's not helping me. So I've got that in the back of my mind because I know that's going to play a factor. So my plan was, you know, we could have played the bump game, could have had Martin walk right at the bull. I really didn't think I'd have a shot. It looks a lot thicker from my angle than it does Martin's. The brush that I thought would be 3 and 4 feet tall is actually about 6 and 7. Too thick to shoot over. At this point, I'm about 80 yards in. I'm working in, and I'm really thinking if I get to like 50, 55 yards, I'm going to be able to shoot into where the bull's bedded. So that's my goal. So now I'm methodically making this move. And, you know, at this point, every inch matters. I mean, it's, you know, you're on pins and needles. I mean, you're within bow range. I'm within bow range right now. I mean, I've worked. This is it. I mean, this is, you know, like, I got goosebumps just thinking about it. This is it, though. I mean, I'm you know, you got this bull and you've done all this and you're within 80 yards. And it's like, if it was just a clear path from me to him, I mean, I'll kill him right now. But it's not, you know, I know I've got to get another 30, 35 yards. It doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're moving one step at a time and now you're against the clock when it comes to the wind and it's the last day, you know, all this shit's running through your head. And it's like, couple times I had to really slow everything down. I had to mentally slow this down in my brain. I had to go back down, hyper focus, kind of stay calm, not let emotions ride high, not force myself to do something stupid. So kind of get myself calmed down. I remember being at 67 yards. I'm like, okay, I need to get another 10, 12 yards. At this point in time, it's about 4:30. I've still got plenty of time as far as time goes. But now what I'm really worried about is I can feel the wind starting to hit me more towards my back and the back of my neck. And that's not good. I'm getting very worried about what's going to take place there. There's an opening down in front of me and I'm like, okay, if I can get to that opening, that's going to put me within 50, 55 yards. I'm going to be damn close to being able to hopefully kill this bull and make a play. So that's the next little plan. You know, we're at plan D or plan, you know, E here. I want to get to this little opening. So I'm scooting on my ass. I got my bow in front of me. I can see the bull pretty good now. He's sleeping still, not on high alert. Things are going really, really well. I get to 55 yards and I'm thinking, oh, this should be money. I stand up. I'm kind of peeking up over the oak brush and it hits me. I'm like, the wind is completely dead wrong. It's hit me in the back of the neck. I am not able to shoot at this point. I realistically need to get another 5 to 6 yards closer. And at that point, I think I'm pretty solid. But this oak brush, you got to remember, from my angle working down this mountain, I'm trying to calculate how tall it is versus how tall I am. And I mean, it's just too tall. You know, I would have needed to have been about 8 feet tall to shoot down into this 5 and 6 foot brush. At this point, the bull is starting, in my opinion, to get little whiffs of me. He's got his head up. He's a little more alert. I think he's starting to maybe sort of pick up traces of something. Hasn't winded me yet, but it's getting very sketchy. At this point in time, you'll see in the video, I'm close. I mean, Martin's got us both in the scope. You know, the bull's down to the right. I'm up at the left. I mean, I start making another move. I want to get another 5 to 6 yards. I'm probably at about 47, 48 yards. And the kick right to the balls takes place. Little gust of wind hits me. About 2 seconds later, bull stands up and just completely spins his head around, puts his nose up in the air, gets a big whiff of me, and just fucking blows out of there. And super awesome, cool footage. But my heart just freaking hits my feet. I mean, I watch this bull blow out of there, watch him run up over the ridgeline, sun setting. That's it. I mean, 51 total days of hunting in the backcountry this year between Wyoming and Utah. Gosh damn, I mean, it's hard to even put it into words, you know, to be that close on that hard of a hunt on a great bull, and to kind of be doing everything right, but just the wind and the thermals, you know, like I said, you can't always plan for how long it's going to take a stock. And there's some things you just can't control. Like in that aspect, if I'm making that stock earlier in the day, thermals aren't nearly as much of a problem. I truly, honestly think if I'm making that stock at 9 o'clock in the morning by 1:30, that bull's dead. I really, truly think that. That's not how it plays out though. You know, that's just not how it took place. That's not how it happened. Great hunt, tough hunt. Just a dramatic way forward to end. Sucks. I mean, not going to lie. Super long plane ride home. I'm forever going to have that stock in my mind, because I really think it's a play I could have made. I know I could have made the shot. My God, I was in the wheelhouse. We're at 47 yards. That's a great opportunity. That's got to be a gimme. Just wanted to bend the limbs back and get back to fucking full draw so bad on that deal. But like I said, though, it's one of those deals where, you know, you win some, you lose some. Things just didn't go my way. You know, it just wasn't meant to be. But that one stung, I'm not going to lie. But coming away from that hunt, man, gosh dang. I'm just a better bow hunter for that hunt, you know? That bow hunt kicked my ass in every aspect, mentally, physically. For me to push as hard as I did and do as much as I did, the miles, the effort, you know, just giving it all I had every single day, knowing, man, this is going to suck. Man, this is going to be brutal. I'm just a better person for it. I'm just a better bow hunter for it, you know? It's one of those grinds. It's one of those hunts that was just a total freaking grind, just an absolute grind. And to be honest, you know, I'm happy. I never settled. I could have killed some younger bucks and younger bulls this year, and I could have settled. I had goals, and I had the bar set for whitetails. I had the bar set for mule deer. I had the bar set for elk, and I wasn't going to come off that. And you know what? I went down swinging, and you know, honestly, looking back, like, I'm proud. I'm proud of the effort. I'm proud of not settling. I tell you guys at the end of every podcast, you know, don't fucking settle. Life, animals, girlfriends, boyfriends, whatever the hell it is, man, don't fucking settle. You know, don't cave in just because it's going to be easier or because it's going to get you some likes on Instagram. You know, don't do shit just because it might make you externally happy for a little bit. You know, if it's not internally going to better you or make you better, don't do it. And that's one thing. I come away from this hunt, I put myself through a lot, and if you go on this hunt, it's mentally and physically, like, it's going to show you how tough you are. And I wanted that. I wanted to see, hey, can I go 6 days and give it my freaking all every gosh damn day and just absolutely put myself to the test? Am I going to be able to do that? Am I going to be able to go day in and day out and make this stuff happen and try to put myself in positions to get stocks and to get plays and even just get chances at bull elk in conditions like this, on a hunt like this? And I was able to do that. And you know what? I walk away from a hunt like this and I'm damn proud. I am super proud of the effort, the energy, you know, what I did, what I was able to accomplish, just putting myself in opportunities, or I'm sorry, putting myself in the moment during stocks to have opportunities would be a better way to phrase it. You know, you got to get on animals and get on stocks to give yourself chances to kill stuff out there. And that was hard in general, was just to do that, you know? And so coming away, yeah, does it suck not punching that tag and not being able to embrace the moment of bending the limbs? Oh, fuck yeah. And I'm not going to sit here and act like, oh, well, I tried. I'm happy about that. That's all that matters. No, it's not. Don't get me wrong. I am proud of certain things. But yeah, of course, I'm out there. I want to freaking punch every tag I have. Every hunt I go on, every stock I go on, it's all in. That's just me. I'm like that as a dad. I'm like that as a boyfriend. I'm like that. I'll be like that as a husband someday. That's just how I am. That's just how I operate. And I'd be lying if I said, well, fuck yeah, I'm out there. I want to punch tags. I want to make it happen. That's why I do it. You know, if I didn't want to be a great dad, I wouldn't have had kids. I wouldn't date if I didn't want to get married and be a great husband I don't do stuff just to do stuff. I do stuff with a purpose and do stuff with a reason. And that's life. That's bow hunting. That's anything. And I think this hunt taught me a lot. And I think, you know, it's one of those grinders. It really opens your eyes and it really makes you think about stuff. And I still you know, am thinking about that hunt, and I'm always going to think about that stock and the what ifs, and but you know, it's just made me so hungry for 2022. I mean, I'm on the verge of killing a big whitetail right now. Gosh damn, I'm close. I'm closing in on a really, really good whitetail, guys. Gosh damn, I sure hope I get to show him to you. Just a bruiser old buck. Got cold, got snow. Man, I'm getting the right weather. Gosh, you know, our season goes till I think February 6th here in Ohio, so I'm just freaking grinding. 51 days out west, I'm over 55 or 60 days of bow hunting whitetails, so I mean, I'm well over 100 days. It's just been a grind, but gosh darn, I've loved it. Watching everybody's success. Oh my God, I don't know how many people I've shared on my stories on Instagram and Facebook, you know, guys that are had, you know, guys and girls, successful seasons, best bucks to date, biggest bucks to date, first buck, first doe, first this, first that, first elk, first mule deer. I mean, it's just been freaking awesome. And I can't thank you guys enough for the support for me, the podcast, WCB, and for sharing in your guys' success. I mean, I fucking love it. I love to see it. It's just been a fabulous year. You know, I've got to see, I said it in the very beginning, one of my main goals was to watch one of my best friends, watch Kurt, shout out to Kurt, watch him kill a buck in Wyoming for his dad. And that's how my year kind of started. And you know what? I've had that memory with me the entire year. I mean, it's been a grind, and have I wanted to kill animals? Well, hell yeah. That's why I'm out there. You know what I mean? Like, of course, but watching him succeed in that, he just got back from a recent mountain lion hunt with Trey and Liv Heiner, and Double Diamond Outfitters, and Devin was there with him. Got to kill that cat. You know, he shot two great bucks. He shot that really good mule deer in Wyoming. I've just been so stoked for guys like him. And, you know, Devin shoots his biggest buck. You know, I got to help him get on that deer, found the buck early, and got to be a part of Devin killing that freaking giant in Utah. I mean, I've just, you know, Martin killed a great elk. Jason's had success. You know, I mean, just so many of my buddies and so many people that I've just got to be part of hunts this year. You know, good buddy Ryan, my boss, and one of my best friends, Christian Berg, Peterson's bow hunting. You know, he got to shoot a good buck on my farm. Me and Keaton, my youngest, got to help him track it and be part of that. Like, I've just had so much to be thankful for. And yeah, it's been a tough year. It's been a grind year. But you know what? Man, it's just been one of those years I'm going to look back on and be like, gosh dang, I held true to myself. I held true to my goals. I held true to what I wanted to do. Man, you guys freaking know the saying, like, I never fucking settled. You know, I mean, practice what you preach. I mean, how am I going to sit up here and tell you guys that, but yet don't do it myself? And this year has been like that. Don't fucking settle. I wasn't going to fucking settle. That's just the bottom line. I'm going to grind it out to the very end, and I'm going to either go down swinging, or I'm going to go down with a buck in the freaking back of the truck. And that's what I'm trying to do right now. But well, this closes out the dreaded elk hunt. Man, what a hunt. What an experience. Gosh dang. Definitely won't be my first and my last late season elk hunt. I've honestly fallen in love with the brutal aspect of it. Tough hunt, tough conditions, but you know what? It's a great way to go chase elk during the final days of season. It's a great way to test yourself. It was a cool hunt. I mean, it's awesome to see the snow on the mountains and fight the cold and be up there. I mean, some of the most beautiful photos I've ever got or been a part of have come on that late season hunt. And like I said, I'm not done yet. I'm going to get a freaking whitetail killed if it's the last thing I do. I'm close. I'm on the freaking verge of getting a good one killed. So stick with me. It's going to be fun. Hope you guys all ended 2021 with a bang. I want all the best for you in 2022. Cannot thank you guys enough for the support of this podcast, of WCB and the Drury Series, and from all of us at Working Class Bowhunter and CC Hunt Files with Clinton Kurt. Hey, happy new year. Best of luck in 2022. You guys know how we're going to end it. Don't fucking settle. See you guys on the next one. Love ya.
Can you say the letter C? CNC Hunt Files.